Here, the old gods are dead.
We're all going out this weekend to mourn the death of the Monty's Rock Bar because we can't be there for Halloween.
That's really sad.
It is sad, but I'll be spending much more time in the Creepy and other bars. Why am I doxing myself? If you want to spike my drink, come here.
Do you think anyone would? Do you think anyone listening to this podcast would spike someone? Be honest with yourself. These queers.
I trust bitches with blue hair. We see you.
Yep, a drunk girl leaves her drink for a second and their hand is immediately over it, covering the straw. Like, nothing gets past them.
I love how we've ended up with, like, the safest demographic in podcasting.
It's so nice, but if we ever said anything untoward, it's over us.
Thank God I edit the stuff myself. The only thing I edit is... just really, really great ideas on how to save the political landscape of the UK and stuff, but I just don't think he's ready for it yet.
Has anyone read the Unabomber's Manifesto?
Anyway, we're doing a shorter intro today because if you listen to last week's episode, we're doing a back-to-back set.
Yeah, and you're getting week-by-week episode for just 2 weeks.
This one's significant and it's timely. Happy Halloween, everybody. We're going to talk about Samhain, finally, so all the pagan bitches can get off my dick for 5 fucking minutes. Every time I ask, I'm like, what do you guys want to hear?
It's the middle of fucking March and some witch talk witch is saying Samhain. I'm like, what do you mean? Can we not wait until like another half of the way through the year, maybe?
Every time. It's folklore, it's Samhain. It's like, do Halloween. So if you want, pause this episode and go back and listen to Scottish Customs and Superstitions Part 1 and 2, because I would treat this as kind of like a little sister of the episodes. It's going to be shorter. There's actually no doubt about it, because there's only so much you can say about Samhain. There's no like a lot of mythology to go along with or anything like that. It is just built purely in customs and tradition.
Masks. It's cunty turnips.
And it's cunty apples.
Cunty apples. That's it.
So we'll take a wee break and then we'll talk about Halloween. By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes.
Happy Halloween. Ooh. Roast.
Does everybody remember in Halloween 2 where the guy keeps saying Samhain?
Oh my God. When we did this episode the first time, because yet again, we decided to record 2 episodes. So this episode was already recorded and my audio was ass. When you were doing this last time, all I could think was Halloween 2, and he said, Samhain, the spirit of Halloween.
So cringe.
I'm like, they read a word and they were like, let's put a story behind this. That is nothing of the sort. What do you mean?
I've also like, let's say it fucking wrong 1,000 times wholeheartedly.
Yeah, he put his psychology into that. Was he a psychologist? A psychiatrist?
He's like some kind of guy. He's wearing a lab coat. It's been a while since I've watched Halloween 2.
Great film, though. It's my favorite of the Halloweens.
So, Samhain, it's pronounced Samhain. It was marked by the ancient Celts as the most significant of the 4 quarterly fire festivals, taking place at the midpoint between the fall equinox and the winter solstice. The beginning of winter was actually seen as the Celtic New Year to the ancient Celts. And it makes sense. Like, I wish your calendar was like that, because it makes so much sense for the year to start as it gets cold, I think.
Yeah, like, I think makes sense. Or, like, anything but what we're doing makes sense, you know? Or, like, start the year in spring. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, it makes more sense to me, especially as somebody who's well, one, interested in like pagan festivals and stuff, but also interested in the way that the Greeks kind of like celebrate spring by like the story of Persephone and how she's like captured, taken to Hades, basically. And then her mother, yes, Demeter, becomes so upset, and Demeter controls the seasons and the harvest and stuff. So when her daughter is captured by Hades, the whole of the earth, like nothing can grow, and it turns cold. And then as Persephone comes back through the underworld, she drops pomegranate seeds everywhere in spring, and then and the world begins to warm as Demeter is happy again, and then we have summer.
I literally have goosebumps thinking about this.
It's such a fucking good story. It's such a good story.
And I just know everyone listening is like foaming at the mouth because you little queers know everything about Greek mythology.
I do like a way to explain seasons. Obviously, Kaliach and Brigid is a good way to like explain that as well, but really sorry to Scottish folklorists. Persephone, it's different. That's such a, it's my favourite myth, 100%.
Yeah. 1,000%. The Greeks just did it different.
Yeah.
I'll say it.
But as far as the ancient Celts go, during Samhain, it was the time of year that hearth fires and family homes were left to burn out whilst the harvest was gathered. After the harvest work was complete, celebrants joined with druid priests to light a community bonfire using a wheel that would cause friction and spark the flames. The wheel was considered a representation of the sun and used along with prayers, and cattle were sacrificed, and participants took a flame for this big bonfire and ran home to relight their hearth with it. So it was like a big community blessing.
Yeah, it's like, you ever played Breath of the Wild and you have to do that to like get the lab up and running?
Yeah, it's similar to that. It's kind of similar to like the Olympic torch as well.
Yeah.
Like you run with a fire.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like a big like community experience, and it's a way to like bring good luck and stuff.
I love it.
I would actually recommend that anybody listen, if you do want to like participate in some kind of like pagan good luck ritual over Samhain, to like do some sort of fire spell, and it can be whatever you want. You don't have to Google like fire spells or whatever. Like, me and Liam are both big believers in that spells and magic can be whatever you want it to be, like whether
it
be
fun for the,
yeah, it's just fun to like,
it's about intent, girls.
Yeah, like if you want to light a tea light and watch it burn out, that's a Samhain ritual. You can do that, and I probably will be lighting candles around my windows and waiting for them to go out as Samhain passes over. I think that's a good way to celebrate.
Yeah, I'll be getting a bit elaborate, but like,
as you do.
Only because I start my PhD the day after.
It's going to get like really Wicker Man in your flat.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Here the old gods aren't dead. For real.
Early texts present Samhain as a mandatory celebration that lasted 3 days and 3 nights, where the community was required to show themselves to local kings or chieftains, and failure to participate was believed to result in punishment from the gods, which usually was illness or death or failure of crops. And it would be like, if you did not show up to Halloween and something bad happened, like somebody in your family died or the crops on your patch of earth were bad, it's kind of like witch. Like if anything's like going wrong, it's like, she's a witch. But in this case, it's like, well, you never showed up to Samhain. What did you expect? So there was also a military aspect to Samhain in Ireland. Holiday thrones were prepared for commanders of soldiers, and anyone who committed a crime or used their weapon during the celebration faced a death sentence. Some documents mention 6 days of drinking alcohol to excess, which was typically mead or beer, along with gluttonous feasts, and this was the same across all the Celtic nations. It was very much a celebration of excess. Because the Celts believed that the barrier between worlds was breachable during Samhain, they prepared offerings that were left outside villages and fields for fairies or shees, like banshees, boven shees, that kind of thing. I guess we all kind of ken that the whole premise of Samhain and Halloween is that the veil between the worlds...
The veil is non-existent anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's down.
Yeah, between the world of monsters and fae and the world of the dead and the living. So everything's up for grabs. Your soul.
The song Gods and Monsters by Lana Del Rey is actually about the origins of Halloween, I think.
So because the veil between the living and dead is thin, it is expected that ancestors might cross over during this time as well, and ancient Celts would dress as animals and monsters so that fairies were not tempted to kidnap them, but they would also leave out offerings for their dead ancestors. Some specific monsters, though, that are associated with the mythology surrounding Samhain include a shape-shifting creature called a pukka that receives harvest offerings from the field. The Lady Gwyn is a headless woman dressed in white who chases night wanderers and is often accompanied by a ferocious black pig.
Okay, she's Welsh.
Yeah, Lady Gwyn being Welsh.
Yeah.
So the Dullahan sometimes appeared as impish creatures and then sometimes as headless horsemen riding flame-eyed horses. Their appearance was a death omen to anyone who encountered them. And a group of hunters known as the Slua haunt Samhain and kidnap people. We did speak about the Slua in Scottish Customs Part 2. They are basically just a large group of fairies who can either possess or kidnap somebody.
Large group of fairies, polo nightclub. CC Bloomed.
Madonna on Wednesday night.
It's never not funny.
So the Slua basically come for the west to enter houses and steal souls. When we spoke about them in the Scottish Customs episode, we basically said that if somebody dies in your home, it's very common to like close your window to the west to make sure that the Slua cannot enter and possess your dead loved one. One of the most popular stories that's told during the Festival of Samhain was the Second Battle of Mag Tuired, which portrays the final conflict between the Celtic pantheon known as the Tuatha De Danann and evil oppressors known as the Fomor. The myth states that the battle unfolded over the period of Samhain. One of the other famous Samhain-related stories is the Adventures of Nera, in which the hero Nera encounters a corpse and fairies and enters into the underworld. So it's much similar to Orpheus and Eurydice in the fact that like Nera goes to the underworld to battle with the spirits there.
Donatella Eurydice.
Oh my god, you missed that. The last episode was so funny that we recorded. What was it I was trying to say? Oh my god, I was trying to say
Grimace. Oh, because the brothers Grimm. And then we were like, does the word Grimm come from
Grimace? But Grimace is one of those words that like I pronounced so wrong for like 10 years because I'd only ever seen it in books that I was reading. And then somebody said Grimace and I was like, oh, that's what that is. And I was like, I didn't actually pronounce it like this, but because it ends in A-C-E, I was like, Grimace.
Grimace. Donatella Grimace. What was the other one? There was another one in this episode.
When it comes up, you'll ken to make the joke. Samhain figured into the adventures of the mythological Celtic hero Finn McCool when he faced the fire-breathing underworld dweller Aileen, who would burn down the Hall of Tara every Samhain. And the Hall of Tara is where the Celtic pantheon kind of lives. So as the Middle Ages progressed, so did the celebrations of fire festivals. More personal Samhain fires nearer to farms became merrier tradition. So instead of this large community bonfire, families would have their own smaller bonfires near their homes. And this was purportedly to protect families from the fae and witches. So rather than having a big team effort, it became more individual, which is, society's truly went to the dogs.
Atomization. It is truly a curse that we are still dealing with. But like when people say we live in a society, actually, no, we don't. We don't, actually.
Aye, so in the medieval period, this is kind of where like carved turnips, which were called jack-o'-lanterns, began to appear. And these were attached by strings to sticks and embedded with coal and then lit, which is how the fire was kept. We spoke about jack-o'-lanterns as well in the Will o' the Wisp episode. So instead of it being Will o' the Wisp, what it is in Scotland, in Ireland they called them jack-o'-lantern. So jack of the lantern. Samhain traditions are not just exclusive to Scotland and Ireland though. In Wales, men tossed burning wood at each other in violent games and set off fireworks. Welsh Samhain sounds class, I'm not gonna lie.
It sounds so much more fun. Like, have you ever tried carving a turnip? Because I have.
It's hard.
You'll be half a finger short after it.
Yeah, I implore anyone not to do that.
Yeah. Use a pumpkin. The Americans have it right. Use a butternut squash if that's all you have.
An orange. I've seen people do that before.
Yeah, pumpkins.
Oh, Lisa Hatsuma is very cute, actually.
It's just not worth losing your hand. Or, like, have you ever seen that picture of someone where they've, like, cut an avocado wrong and the knives went straight through their hand and the avocado? That is what would happen if you tried to carve an ape. That is genuinely what would happen. So please do not try this at home. Leave it to the past.
Yeah, some traditions did need to die.
In Northern England, men would parade around on Samhain with noisemakers. So, like, this would be, like, any hen tied to a stick and, like, rattled around in your hand just to ward off evil spirits. And the tradition...
Oh, that would do my head in.
Yeah.
That would be very
people
annoying.
People still kind of do that, like, with the, like, fire festivals, the beating drums and stuff. That's the whole reason why they play, like, music really loudly and set off fireworks and light fires. It's just to ward off evil.
Yeah, throwing a flaming log at me, that's fine. Noise, that's where I draw the line.
The tradition of a dumb supper began during this time, in which food was consumed by celebrants, but only after inviting ancestors to join in, giving the families a chance to interact with the spirits of the dead until they left following dinner. Children would play games to entertain the dead, whilst adults would update the dead on the past year's news. That night, doors and windows might be left open for the dead to come in and eat the cakes that had been left for them. So it's a very positive celebration of death. And we've very much lost our wives. I can remember when I was in college, I wrote an article about, like, mourning and death culture. Obviously, Irish wakes have very much remained the same. But even, I think we spoke about this before, my mum's mother, she was left in the home when she died before her funeral, because that is, like, the traditional Scottish way. And it's a much more personal thing today than keep somebody in the fridge for days on end and no be able to, like, interact with them and stuff. Like, obviously, they were kind of shiting themselves because Marion was, like, in the other room. And it's not something that we're used to anymore. But it is, like, a much more personal way to deal with death and, like, go and visit them and spend time with them when they're gone.
It's more real as well. Yeah. Like, it feels final.
Anyway, as Christianity gained a foothold in pagan communities, church leaders attempted to reframe Samhain as a Christian celebration. The first attempt was by Pope Bonifaci in the 5th century. That's it.
Donatello Bonifaci. Even though it's not even the same, is it? Wait, it is.
It is. It is Bonifaci. Or Boniface, if you want to... Scottish.
Yeah,
Boniface.
Scottish, like. But Boniface.
he moved the celebration to May 13th and specified it as a day celebrating saints and martyrs. And the fire festivals of October or November, however, did not end with this decree. So, like, the transition from paganism into, like, Christianity was... It wasn't like a... It didn't happen every night. And folk were like, nah, the fire festivals were class. They keep doing that. But in the 9th century, Pope Gregory moved the celebration back to the time of the fire festivals. But he declared it All Saints Day on November 1st and All Souls Day would fall on November 2nd. So that's why we have these, like, Christian holidays on these dates, is because the Vatican were like, oh, we need to kind of keep up with... How can we make this about us? Neither new holiday did away with the pagan aspects of the celebration, and October 31st became known as All Hallows' Eve, or Halloween, and it contained much of the traditional pagan practices before being adopted in 19th century America through Irish and Scottish immigrants bringing their traditions across the ocean. Guisin, or trick-or-treating, derives from the ancient Irish and Scottish practices and the nights leading up to Samhain. Here... practices of putting on costumes and going door to door and singing songs to the dead were common, and they made their way out to America, and that's how they became trick-or-treating. Cakes were typically given as payment, but these would eventually turn into the sweeties that we now know. I spoke about this to Liam. And
I know what you're about to say, and I'm still like, the way you with your whole chest said to me, do you know this song? Like, did you do this song? I was like, no.
Well, so in my little village where I grew up, Halloween traditions were very much strong. And instead of going to people's doors and going trick-or-treat, which I think is bullshit, at least tell a joke.
Oh, I don't do that.
Make the spirits laugh. or sing a song, and we would sing, we would kind of mix it up. We would either tell a joke or we'd go up to the next door and then we'd sing a song, and we would go, Halloween is coming, the goose is getting fat, please put a penny in the old man's hat. And there's more to it than that, but I can't remember. If anybody sang that song, please let me in. It could not just be vocalised.
The way with your whole chest, you were like, oh yeah, and this song. And I was like,
Halloween is coming as a tune.
I feel like maybe, I don't know if it's just because you sang it to me last week or if I actually do remember people doing it, but it just wasn't for me. But I also didn't do trick or treat. I kind of just stood there menacingly until someone said something.
Maybe the council estate had more energy, I don't know.
I would just stare at people menacingly until they asked me like if I had like a joke or something, and then I'd tell them a joke. What was your go-to Halloween joke?
My go-to Halloween joke, I don't know. As a child, I had many joke books.
Yeah.
I had a Halloween specific one as well.
One that I remember today that I just laughed out loud to myself, and then I did this scenarios and he just stared at me. It's not even Halloween related. It's just like, it's one that I remember telling and it just makes me laugh to this day. Is a bear walks into a bar. He says, "Hey buddy, can I get a whiskey and a Coke?" The bartender says, "Sure, pal. But why the big pause?" The bear says, "I don't know. I was born with them." And you have to do it in that accent or it's not as funny.
I kind of hanky a joke. Apart, like, see, when we were wee, me and my sister, like, actually drew up and wrote a joke book. And my nana found it like a few years ago, and we were reading it, and there's one in it that's a total belter, like that 2 5-year-olds wrote. And I have been gasping for her to try and find that joke book again, and she can't find it. One day I will be able to tell you this joke when she finds it. But like, genuinely, we were reading through it and we're like, here, that's class.
There are some jokes that you make with your friends and then you think you could do a stand up to her. Like, it's crazy.
This is that. This is that dream.
I might write a joke book. Give me a month, okay? I'll get back to you.
Anyway, back to Halloween. Halloween pranks also have a tradition in Samhain. So the trick of the trick and treat comes from ancient Celts, but the children in the times were typically, like, when they played tricks, they blamed them on fairies and monsters, whereas children now just, like, egg Wendy's. Just do it. Respect.
Throw toilet roll at things, eggs, shit on someone's doorstep, the usual.
Throwing toilet roll. That's so boring. Throw an egg. Get out there, guys. Get into the streets and throw eggs.
Eggs. Yeah, you need to get into that medieval, like, disapproving of someone in a stall energy. Get into your fucking... what you call that place where all the witches died? Fife. Get into your fife core and start throwing rotten vegetables at things. Do it. It is cathartic. Go to Parliament.
Bomb them.
A sack. No.
Not yet. Save
for
that for
legal
the
reasons, that is a joke. Go with a sack of rotten tomatoes. Don't actually do this either, because you'll probably get arrested for a long time. And just start throwing tomatoes.
Bomb them.
It's fun. Go to a teacher you hated. Like, if you had, like, that teacher that was just, like, belligerently homophobic in school. Get eggs and tomatoes and just go for it.
Robert Burns, the famous Scots poet, wrote about the myths and legends and traditions associated with Halloween in Scotland in his poem, creatively named Halloween, which was written in 1785. Kind of spoke about that in the Tam O'Shanter episode, and it is evident by the fact that he wrote Tam O'Shanter that Robert Burns was a bit spooky. Like, he used to sit at the fire in his mum's house, and his mum and auntie were a bit ooky spooky. And they would share folk tales and myths and legends and stuff. So he wrote Halloween. I'll say a wee bit of it. "Some merry, friendly country folks together did convene to burn their nits and poo their socks and hod their Halloween." As mentioned in the poem, a common Halloween tradition was for an engaged couple to each put a nut on the fire. So that's what he means about burning their nits. If the nuts burned quietly, then the marriage would be happy. However, if the nuts spat and hissed, the marriage would be stormy. Similarly, if a girl put two nuts on the fire, one for her lover and one for herself, if the nuts spat and hissed, then this was a bad omen for their future and she should avoid that situationship. And then
that's kind of real.
And then when he's saying about pooing the stalks or hodding their stalks, it means that they're pulling stalks of a plant, and the plant typically used was stalks of kale or castix, as they were known. The stalks were pulled out of the ground after dark with one's eyes shut, and the idea was that the length and straightness of the stalk would indicate a future quote partner's unquote height and figure. And if it was a skinny, tall stalk of kale, it is a given that his appendage might be massive anyway. It just is like that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then any soil on the stalk would indicate wealth. So the dirtier the better, as Millie Bobby Brown would say.
The dirtier the better. She can't have a PR team, surely.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. If Millie Bobby Brown, this is the way, like, Millie Bobby Brown was like eating carrots on some YouTube video. I think it was for like Vogue or something, to be honest.
No, it's which one is it where they do like the like food diaries, like what I eat in a day? It's they also do the like the lyric ones where the people get given a lyric and they have to do
like
a song that has that lyric
in
it.
Anyway,
Trixie Mattel has a really good one of those.
She's eating carrots and she's talking about that she likes ones that come straight for the ground. If they're dirtier, they taste better. And she just looks like Gromit or Wallace.
The way her face contorts into claymation, it is disturbing.
I can for a fact that her PR lady was behind that camera being like, shut the fuck up. Like, shut up. But you kind of have a good time if that's who you're doing PR for. I know that it's bad that like she does get like a bit of shit and she's quite young, but like, for fuck's sake, she kens what memes are. That's why, like, when Taylor Swift's in public, she cannot talk until her PR woman has said speak.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like, if you watch any videos of, like, Taylor Swift at events, her PR lady, Tree Payne's next to her, and if Taylor Swift goes to stand up, she goes, just wait, and she goes, okay, stand.
That is insane. Why would you live your life like that?
It must be miserable. It must be.
Yeah, perfect image. Horrible life.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're rich and, like, causing that much carbon emission, like, how bad can life be? But at the same time, like, my God, I'd rather be dead.
Anyway.
Fame is a prison, as Lady Gaga says.
Speaking of death, apples were seen by Celts as a sign of fertility and abundance, but bobbing for apples, or duking for apples as we call it, is actually just a fun game. A basin is filled with water and apples, and all you need today is chomp, chomp,
waterboard
chomp.
Waterboard your
friends, or try and get apples in the water. I fucking loved duking for apples. I think it's class. But if anybody's hesitating in front of that water, just being able to like shove your hand on the back of their head, you didn't nearly drown them. Loved it. As a sociopathic little creepy child, I was a big fan.
Yeah.
What was your favourite Halloween costume when you were wee? What was the best thing you ever dressed up as?
Okay, not the best one I ever dressed up as, but there was a Scooby-Doo Halloween costume that I lived in for months after Halloween.
Bet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There were signs of something about my brain from an early age that were just ignored and overlooked. But I wore it for months.
This episode's just about being autistic, isn't it?
Yeah. Waterboarding your friends, wearing a costume for more than is socially acceptable.
We spoke about this last time as well, but there's a total class picture of my sister in primary one dressed up as Dracula, but like in a kind of like Count Fu Sesame Street kind of way. So like massive, like their beautiful blonde hair was spray painted black, and then they had a big triangle painted onto their forehead, white skin, dark eyes, blood around their lips and stuff. And has like the like classic like ruffles, like Munster's kind of Dracula costume on.
Love.
And they're sat next to my pal Ailey. And Ailey's like meant to be a witch or something, but she definitely doesn't have her hat on, so she just looks cute. And like Carl's next to them looking absolutely demented. It's such a cool costume though, and they did win best dressed. at the primary one Halloween party. But my mum really loved doing her face paint and stuff. I can remember being like, I actually have a picture of this as well. I'm going to put it on the story. It's me dressed up as Little Red Riding Hood, but my mum had painted my face to look like a decaying dead zombie. So I was Little Dead Riding Hood, and I had a wolf's mask in a basket that was wearing like a granny's hat and glasses. It was cool.
That is very smart as a costume goes.
And then I think that year my sister went as like some sort of like punk fairy kind of thing.
Love.
Anyway, that's kind of a summary of what Samhain is and how we still kind of hold to these pagan traditions. I would say that these pagan traditions have lasted longer than any others, or as strongly. Like, we really do, like, Christianity has not had anything to do with Halloween. And another, I believe that they're a blog, and I think they have a podcast as well. They're called Scotland Stories. And on their blog today with Halloween, they had this very great summary about what Samhain can mean. And
it's really good.
I genuinely could never say it better myself. So thank you to Scotland Stories for this great little excerpt. Quote, "Death to our modern world is something to be feared and not celebrated, which is perhaps partly why the true meaning of Samhain has been lost amongst the commercialization of Halloween. But for our ancient ancestors, death was only a new beginning. When the winter sets in and the earth seems to all but die, it is inevitably reborn again in the spring. Thus, Samhain is believed to have been the Celtic New Year, bringing a brand new cycle of life, a time for lighting candles and fires through the winter, reflecting on the year gone by and looking forward to life and light on the other side."
Cobbler.
So, that being said, everybody light a little fire, speak to your gone loved ones.
Eggs.
Egg people's houses. Live a little. Play a little trick on your friends or your partners that you live with. Tell a few jokes. I would get into it. Like, it's the best way to... And even if you're no Scottish or Irish or for any Celtic nation, I think it's a great little way to celebrate the end of the year and to celebrate a harvest coming in. Light a little fire in your
heart.
Yeah,
get spooky.
But anyway, that has been the long-awaited Samhain episode. I know I said this was going to be short. We've been recording for an hour.
My God.
I'll probably be able to edit it into something still a bit
35
longer.
35 minutes.
Yeah, probably. 35 minutes is my guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's been the Creepy Wee Podcast. If you want to follow us on social media, you can follow us on Instagram at The Creepy Wee Podcast, Twitter at The Creepy Wee Pod, anything else, thecreepywepodcast.co.uk, and always leave us 5-star reviews wherever you listen. Thanks. Bye.
I was working in the lab late one night.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.